We are on Tariq Al-Mendeley. Masa al-khair.
Ahla wa sahla.
I'm going to preface this by saying sorry to those who speak English and don't understand Arabic. ومنعتذر من اللي بيحكوا عربي يلي ما كتير بيفهموا انجليزي. We're going to try to keep it loose.
Third culture stuff.
Exactly. A good problem to have, yeah, I think, Mahek.
Absolutely.
You are the label and artist partnerships manager at TikTok.
Correct.
In MENA.
Correct.
Big up.
Correct.
Big deal, yani.
Yeah, man, it's been quite the journey. It's given me the opportunity to uplift a lot of artists that I want to uplift and that deserve to be uplifted that usually don't have the platform for that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You sent me the link to the podcast you did with Jed on Unjaded. Shout out to Jed.
Yeah.
Great podcast.
Big shout out. Thank you, man.
And I think he has some amazing questions. Farahawil, I'm going to try as much as possible to kind of ask the things or from a different perspective.
Yeah.
بس يلي استوقفني. And you started as an artist. I kind of want to dig a bit deeper into that. I know you tried to avoid that on his podcast, but I'd like to know maybe a little more about what got you into it and kind of where you are with it, because you touched on a point that we're in today's day and age, it doesn't matter what age you are, what ethnicity you are.
Absolutely.
If you've got the goods and you know how to work the socials, you could pretty much knock it out of the park.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Okay. So as an artist, I mean, it started when I was way, way, way younger. And I have pictures of me playing the piano when I was 4 or 5 years old. I've always been around music. Music was always my favorite thing. My mom would put music on her like belly when she was pregnant, and
okay,
I would
nice,
move.
Nice.
This is a story I learned recently. I didn't know that.
Oh, okay. Good to know.
Yeah. So I got into it pretty early. I mean, from my school days, I was in choir since I was a kid. So I'm a choir kid, which is interesting because I was a bass/baritone. So you can tell from the deep voice, but it could also, I mean, range. It started as that, and I was doing performing arts as well.
This is in Beirut, I'm assuming.
This was in Beirut. Yeah. I was born and raised in Beirut. Yep. So it all started over there. بلشت إنه choir, performing arts, you know, that's where I kind of harbored the love for it even more. And I was always, you know, infatuated with who wrote what song, who produced what song. I would study credits very religiously, although
back in the day, we're talking CDs days here or
iTunes.
Okay, iTunes.
I would say, because you could see the credits then. I would go on Wikipedia and try to see who did what.
Connect
you know?
The dots. Yeah.
Hey, exactly. I was always very infatuated with that side of things. Who did what? Like at EM Maxima. I was a pop kid most of my life when I was younger. So, and then I got into R&B, I got into hip hop, all of that came a bit later on. And then, you know, I was always a shy kid. I would put covers on YouTube, and then I would...
Oh, you started with covers on YouTube?
I started with covers on YouTube. They were terrible. Thank God they don't exist anymore. And I got made fun of for them, and it was a whole thing. But then we were over that, and those same people who used to make fun of me, were when I started putting out originals, like, oh, wow, that's so cool. I'm like,
Yeah, remember...
Tell yourself that 5 years ago.
Releases ago or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, as an artist, I always wanted to be my own artist, right? And I love music, and I knew how to play the piano. I taught myself how to write. It was a whole thing. It took me a few years to actually develop my artist persona and what I wanted to do with my music. And if it were now, though, I would do it completely different.
In what sense?
The direction I was taking sonically now, I feel like I'm way more submerged into what I actually would have done back then.
Yeah.
I was doing kind of alternative R&B that was very...
At the time we're talking? Okay.
Yeah. I would say that was... I started really properly pursuing it as an artist career in 2014. I did one cover at the time, which was a reimagined version of a song. And then I started writing and writing and writing. And I put out my first original, and I started also performing here and there. I was doing a lot of covers at first because you didn't have the infrastructure to the production. And like, I used to write and play the piano. That was
And were you singing in English or Arabic?
English. Completely English. Although I was pushing for people to sing more in Arabic, but I couldn't do it myself. No, I
feel like we have a lot of things in common. We'll get into it in a second. Yeah. but it's interesting. Was there a song at the time you wish was yours? Like if at the time, we're talking 2013, 14, 15, was there a song out in radio? Because I know you're a fan of Ariana. You're a fan of The Weeknd.
Yeah.
So
those are my musical mom and dad.
You're getting me with the alternative R&B. I'm just trying to get a sense of if there was a song back then that you wish had been written for you or you had written. that you think you would have been kind of in your wheelhouse?
I think it was, what was it called? Oh my God, fake fan. The Hills by The Weeknd, okay. I think. And okay. also yep. Wicked Games, which was 2013.
Gotcha.
So yeah. those were like, I felt songs that I could sing that like, maybe I didn't directly relate to, but sure. like the vibe of it, the production of it, the sonic aspect of it, I really related to. But yeah,
so
definitely.
With The Weeknd being probably an alto, I'm thinking, if not higher than that, I had a problem because I too have in a past life, artist, singer, songer. Yeah. I emulated Boyz II Men growing up.
Oh my
and
they're God.
All, you know, I'm a baritone. Do you know what I mean? So I was trying to hit notes that I had no business getting near. Yeah. So my question to you is, did you have that problem where you were trying to sing songs that weren't necessarily in your range, or did you have a good sense of kind of where you sound good?
Yeah, I kind of had a good sense of where I could go vocally. Like I could hit the high notes if I wanted to. I got better with time because I did a lot of vocal training yep. and vocal exercises and all of that shebang. But I kind of tried, and then it was really trial and error for me. But I never let it limit me.
Gotcha.
There was no wrong in trying.
Sure, sure.
But yeah.
Were you flexible enough in that? Because I feel like we're obviously now genres almost don't exist anymore.
Oh, yeah.
But I feel like at the time it was still a thing. You couldn't do R&B and like.
You had to box
bluegrass,
yourself,
exactly,
which
you know?
Is so weird.
It is weird now.
To me now.
I mean, there's a freedom now that didn't exist back
exactly.
then, you know? And you were dinged for it, you know what I mean? Mm. Like if you tried, it's like you're confused or you don't know what you're doing.
Mm. You don't know your identity.
Exactly. So. And being that you were singing Western or, you know, English, let's say, did you have local heroes or was all that you were looking at in the US or
funny enough, yeah, it's a good, I really like that question. Yeah, it was mostly I was looking towards the West because yeah. at the time we didn't have the people that we have now where I could be like, oh, like I want to sound like Wix or yeah. oh, I want to sound like, I don't know, even Saint Laurent now, you know what I mean? Like, oh, I want to sound like Zayn or Noel Kharman.
There was no one established enough to emulate.
Yeah, yeah, you know, right. Like these up and comers, like I really like what they're doing and I would have used them as inspirations
gotcha.
had they have been yeah. then there. Because like we didn't really have access to them.
Yeah.
Like 20, really up until like 4 or 5 years ago.
I feel like just before COVID is kind of where we made
yeah,
that.
Where people started having these examples to use yeah. as inspirations. Yeah. Like, back in the day, and no, I wasn't, with all due respect to everyone, like it wasn't really my thing, the top 40 that we had here. Yeah. I mean, it's just.
And to be fair, again, that's something that I'd really like to kind of get into in a bit, just in terms of the state of things, where we are, where we're headed. Because I still feel like in a lot of ways, the industry here, as small as it is it's in its infancy, you know, it's.
Oh, for sure.
It's not established enough. And, I, you know, again, to reference the Unjaded podcast you talk about, which I think is a very important topic. How far behind we are on publishing and all the infrastructure and stuff like that. So, but I feel like someone who is wanting to get into music has a lot to pick and choose from now.
Oh,
where
yeah.
Just
absolutely.
10 short years ago, that wasn't the case, you know?
Yeah. And the whole school of like, you don't write your songs, you don't, like, you just buy songs. And
yeah.
that culture for me just doesn't make sense. Cause, like, okay, you have artists in the West that do that. You have Celine Dion, you have Whitney Houston that don't write their own songs. Or
the Selena Gomez's or the Demi Lovato's. And it doesn't have to be super established. Even the Ariana Grande's, okay, she participates, but by and large, it's mostly Max Martin and company, you know, so it's
like
a common thing.
With Ariana, for example, that's an artist that comps her own vocals. But like in the Arab world, there was no one doing that. It's very few, very, very select few. Yani. The only one maybe like of the big ones is like Najwa Karam would actually get into like the.
But Najwa Mukhadram, I mean, Najwa has been around for like
exactly,
a long time,
so she knows and she's learned and she's not to speak on anyone's experience.
Let me preface. If we're not singling out anyone as likes or dislikes,
we're talking in general.
I don't necessarily love everyone. I love most people, but you know, just as an FYI, and no, it's not. If we cover someone or we talk about someone, it's not because we favor or anything like that. We're not playing favorites here. So
we're just speaking facts, right?
Yeah.
And no, that whole school of like, because I used to write my songs and I used to look at people who wrote their own songs and who really went in the studio and worked with the producer, not just like, okay, here's $10,000, give me a song. Like, which is fine. Like, if you're that kind of artist, it doesn't mean that you're not a legitimate artist. You're talented still. I mean, debatable.
You're a talent. I mean, you're a vehicle, right? It's like whether some people want to perform, some people want to get more into the nitty gritty and like the you know, the details of putting it together.
And like, if you're an artist that buys a song but makes me feel like it's yours and like you're really singing from that place of pain and anguish, if it's that, kudos to you. Yeah, like, you really, that's what I care about.
And I also noticed that, you know, when you're a producer, you tend to make music to impress other producers. When you're an artist, you tend to make music to impress other artists. And I learned that very early on that, you know, I had to draw a line in the sand. Who am I trying to impress? Or, you know, my audience is who I care about. A lot of people like you and I happen to be nerdy to a certain extent to want to know who did it because we like the craft. We like the, not everyone is into it.
You know? 90% of people don't care.
But, you know, it's like, I don't care what they did, that they went up, you know, like counter melodies or harmonies. They listen to the song as a whole. Whereas we're, you know, kind of dissecting it where we're doing all that stuff. But there's no one way, right way or wrong way anyway. It just happens to be kind of your truth or, you know, what you gravitated toward, which is very interesting. And then, so you did that.
I did that.
You did that. What made you kind of want to pivot from the pursuit of being an artist?
Yeah. I released, two songs and I was working on a lot. I was working on an EP. I was in LA, obviously. That's where I really like found the people, my people.
Can we bridge the gap of how you got to LA from Beirut?
Basically, I was fortunate enough that like I wanted to continue studying. I had finished my undergrad, BLAU. I studied business like any other kid that didn't know what they wanted to do, right? Yeah. And I worked in advertising and all of that. But then at like 22, 23, I was like, listen, if I'm not going to go try a career in music in whatever shape or form, I'm not going to ever do it. Yeah. So I went to my parents, who I'm fortunate enough that they get to support me in that sense. And not a lot of people get that. And I know how not privileged. Well, yeah, privileged.
It's a big deal.
I appreciate
to have the
that privilege.
Yeah.
It's a springboard to something better, you know? Like, I went to them and I'm like, hey, I want to study music business. They're like, no. I'm like, okay. I tried that at 18. It didn't work. Oh, you're not ready, which they're right. I'm a very emotional, attached person in terms of like, I'm very attached to family and to my country and my friends and all of that. There was no way I could have done that at 18, very transparently. So at 23, I was like, okay, listen, I made this presentation and I explained this whole program that I did at UCLA Extension. It was a music business program. I'm like, listen, like, these are the courses. This is what I'm learning. These are the career opportunities. This is like the nitty gritty of what I'm going to do. They're like, khalas, okay, go. You know, and that's how I got there. And then I didn't know anyone there. Like, I literally just knew my roommates, who are, one of them is Aframi, who is an incredible artist. And, you know, I didn't know anything. And I just went there and I started school and I met these producers that I work with. Their names were Garrett and Christian. They're super, super talented. And we started working, you know, like we caught a vibe and it just, I had these songs as demos. Like at that point I had started like tinkering on Logic. Terrible, but like I tried, right?
You have to start somewhere.
And then these songs came to life and I released the first one and it did okay. And it started playing on radio in Lebanon. I came back that summer, the first summer, and I started performing. Like, there was Fête de la Musique, which is a huge deal.
Yep.
I did that. I did TV interviews, radio interviews, all of that. So I'm like, wow, I was living it, you know? Like, I did it, you know?
This is while you're still in LA, but coming here to do those things, right?
Yep. Exactly. This was like not even a year into it. And I had released my first single ever. And it was such a huge deal. And I did everything. And I basically applied what I was learning.
That's it.
So like the whole
self-distributed
strategy,
I assume.
Yeah. Shout out DistroKid. Yeah. Honestly, man. Yeah. Like, that was a lifesaver. Had I not went to LA, I wouldn't have no clue about all of these things. And I see that with so many artists.
It's such
in
a
the
black
region.
Box, man. Especially here, Yandy. I feel like education crazy. Has got to like 10x or a million x because people just don't know. And I like, some people want it so bad that they're like, they'll try anything. Yeah. And they'll find their way into it, but.
Because they'll just get scammed.
Yeah.
You know, like it's so sad that some artists like don't understand what a master share is or what publishing. Hala, to be fair, there's no such thing as publishing yet. No, we were just saying that.
At least knowing, regardless of whether we're going to bridge the gap here between how it is, because every territory has nuances and stuff like that. But understanding that stuff is so important because you know what the precedence is, you know what the baseline is. You know, I mean, one thing that baffled me in the US, you don't have something called artist royalties when a song is played on radio. Whereas in Europe, you get a lot of money from that.
That's true.
You know, so, but knowing to begin with what an artist royalty is versus a songwriter royalty or publisher, you know, if you're in the business, it's a business first, guys. I mean, look, it's art. But if you want to attract the attention of any labels or even, you know, expand, you have to look at it as a business. You know, it just happens to be art.
It is what it is, right? So like to go back to the journey.
Yeah.
So DistroKid, DistroKid again. And I released those songs and they did well. But then, you know, like I started like getting towards the end of my program and I'm like, the reality of things is I need to get a job. I'm like, listen, I mean, I love the music business. I like the idea of managing artists or A&Ring or what have you. So I just looked at like how other artists were doing things. And I'm like, you know, I don't have that drive for it as much as I thought.
To push as an artist?
To really push and write. I was writing a song every other week. And like the discipline is just so different. You really have to be in the studio every single day. And we didn't have that growing up back home. So like, I don't blame it on anything, but like the circumstances. And also like, maybe I didn't want it bad enough. But then I re-strategized in my brain and I'm like, okay, I love music. I love the core of it. And I love everything about it. And I love supporting artists. Like that's always been a thing about me. I've always been a sort of fanboy or stan, as we call it. So I'm like, why don't I just combine these two things and just go for it, you know? So that's really where the switch came. And then I met so many people through, like, I'm a very social person. So I go out, I'm going to like get to know everyone in the room, no matter how big or small or whatever, whoever they are. I truly believe in really, you never know.
Connections is everything, man.
Yeah. And that, it's everything. Like I've gotten so much from just really getting to know someone at an industry party. And then you never know where they're going to become, where you're going to be and how things happen really. So I decided to make that switch and I'm like, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But luckily...
Were you at peace with that? Or did something kind of tug at you at the time?
There was like this little like... But then, you know, like I did it. I performed here and there. I did my songs on the radio. I got a lot of Shazams. I got streams. Like, khalas, you know, like I did it.
You tasted it.
It's like I tasted a little spoon of it. And I was content with that. Not at first, but then I'm like, listen, you know... It's just the reality of things, as hard as it is. But I still got to do what I loved. And I love what I do. And I loved what I started doing there.
I also found out that due to some visa issues, you had to leave the States to be back here. And I sympathize with having had to go through that. But I'd like to ask, I know that part of why you're here is deliberate and you kind of want to do something to kind of push the momentum and to really... support up-and-coming artists. If given the opportunity to go back, would you make that choice?
It's
not a right or wrong.
No,
I'm just wondering,
I know.
Did you feel like there's unfinished?
I felt like there is something unfinished, but like in the grand scheme of things, I look at it in different ways. So my mom has this saying she likes to use, لا تكرهوا شيئا لعله خيرا لكم.
Yeah, of course.
And I'm like, just don't do that to me right now. And when I first came back, like I was depressed and I had mentioned that and then in Judd's podcast and I was really, really depressed. Like I'm like, I really got to where I am and like so many, and I really fulfilled everything not everything that I wanted to do. I barely did like 2% of what
but
I wanted to do.
But you had cut through the noise and
exactly.
You were in.
I was in.
Even though, you know, the funny thing is the industry, it's not an address. It's not like you go to 555 La Brea Boulevard and suddenly I'm in the industry.
I used to live on La Brea.
I did too. In Hollywood, but I'm saying, you know, like the industry is not an address. One day you're not in the industry, you're like,
What?
I'm here. How did I get here? You know, it's so random.
And
that
that's
way.
What happened, you know, like 3 months into my job, I was working for Grassfed Music, who manages Sabrina Claudio, a bunch of other artists. And 3 months into my job, I was backstage at Coachella, just hanging with like Justin Bieber and Billie Eilish and Khalid. And I'm like,
How did I get here?
Like, yeah. what is going on? Like, yeah, is this really a simulation? You know, so like going from that to like back in my house in Beirut, and not that there's anything wrong with it. I was like,
the contrast,
I had lost
is pretty
my
stark.
Job and everything. And I'm like, yeah. And given the opportunity, if I would go back a year and a half ago, or when did it, like, and if you told me this in August 2020 or September 2020, I'd be like, yeah, I want to go back. I don't want anything to do with this region. But after being back and really diving into it properly and discovering all the incredible artists that I did, and I would...
It'd be hard. I get the sense that it would be hard.
Yes,
for you,
but I would be not 100% back, but like back and forth, because I would want to
bridge
the gap. Yeah, and I feel like with the experience I got in the US and with the experience I have here now, and with my job being exposed to different markets, so South Africa, Europe, Asia, LATAM, and just understanding all these different markets, and with the experience that I had in the US that also was multicultural, I feel like I truly have a global mindset in the way I think when it comes to music. So I feel like this is where I can offer value if I had the opportunity to go back.
Gotcha.
It would be something where it would just be springboarding artists from here, or like really showcasing a light on the Swana region. So like, yeah, given the opportunity, I would do a 50-50 kind of thing, or just like a nomad type of thing.
Yeah, I was curious about it because... I could tell you didn't want to talk too much about the reasons why you had to come back. It had something to do with visa. So I'll leave it alone unless you want to elaborate a little more.
No, it was literally just like I was, it's the H-1B visa, like that's the lottery visa or whatever. I was supposed to do that. I was going to try and like, I didn't get the lottery initially.
Yeah.
I was supposed to try and get another sort of visa, and then everything just stopped.
Were you on a student visa at the time?
I was on a student visa and then on OPT.
Got it.
So I got to work for a certain amount of years, and it just didn't work out.
Yeah.
And because everything stopped at the time because of the whatever,
the Trump thing.
Yeah.
Was it related to?
No, Trump had stopped everything that had to do with like.
Well, my cousin, our cousin, actually won the lottery.
Yeah,
he had won it.
Yeah.
He missed it by like a couple of days or a week or something. Like, there's something stupid. You know what I mean? Like, that's like life-changing opportunity. And he couldn't go anymore.
Yeah. It's just, it was ridiculous to me because at the end of the day, I was contributing to the society over there. I was paying taxes, which was ridiculous to me. But
there's a price to pay everywhere. Right?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, and basically that was it. And I just was looking at the world with so much hate, and like, I was just so bitter. Because like I was doing my thing and I had put my foot in the door. Like, why not just let me contribute?
You've successfully parlayed it into something amazing. I feel like
absolutely.
You look at the landscape here, there aren't that many positions. You're probably, if not the best position, one of the best positions you could possibly be in, with arguably one of the best companies to be doing it in.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? So
I agree.
I feel like it's the beginning, not the end. Like, it's just,
absolutely.
I think it's, you know, to echo what your mom said, it's what you make of it, you know?
Exactly. And it took me so long to realize that, like, I was even like maybe before trying to get into where I am now and it didn't work. And also that happened for a reason, because I had to learn the landscape. I couldn't just spring into something without knowing. I mean, I knew about like the different artists, the landscape and everything, but I really had to research and like know my thing and just be in it for a while and discover.
And I think more importantly, understand it with a local vernacular, because
it took me so long.
It was a big mistake that
it's still,
even people of Arab descent in the US, they feel like just because they're from here and they're doing it there, it doesn't translate.
Mm.
There's something that gets lost in translation. If you try to do things musically the way they are implemented there, if you try to do it here, it doesn't work.
Mm-mm.
It just doesn't add up. You have to really understand all the intricacies and all the push and pull and like the stuff
the politics.
That's like, politics and just the makeup. I mean, one of the hardest things to solve for here is you're talking about 22 uniquely different accents, dialects, whatever you want to call it, and listening habits, and you know, that's
and within
really,
the country itself, there's like different things.
Yeah, it's a hard thing to solve for, especially you and I share something that we're both pop heads. You know, if you want to, pop is just popular commercial, right? Indie right now has had, you know, a massive surge, which is great, but usually indie is the alternative to pop. We don't have a proper pop to go indie from. You know what I mean? We're like indie.
Hagatmentel.
Exactly. Surti. But it's, you know, it's super, it's a very interesting thing to solve for. But I think, again, I really see your position as that of a privileged one, not to say that you, I think you earned it. You wouldn't be where you are had you not gone through the experiences,
through.
You know, which is great. Scanning ahead. Is there, like if you look at a Clive Davis or say an L.A. Reid or Simon Cowell, do they now become kind of the model of where you'd like to get? Or is it a hybrid of potentially going back to the artistry and the production and the songwriting / the business?
No, it's definitely that route. Like we have Sal, who's incredible. We have Suhail Nafar, who's a legend.
Shout out to Suhail. He's been on the podcast. Amazing guy.
That's big, bro. Yeah. Like that's I appreciate him so much. It was so funny. Like I got in touch with him when he was still at Spotify at the time. And it was right before the pandemic hit. And I just sent him a DM and he was just so supportive. And I was managing a bunch of artists at the time. Like, can I get on this playlist? Can I get my artist on this playlist? And he was just like, I value him so much. And then when I started my new gig, we really started working together more. And I just, whenever I want advice, just in general, I call him up, you know.
Like he's good peeps, man.
He's incredible, man. Yeah. Like him, even Ghazi, who I haven't had that much one time with, but like people like that are people I really look up to and I learn from, because we haven't had anyone like that before. Like Sal, Ghazi, and Suhail, and a lot of others. Like
they're,
you know,
paving
I
way
can't
for the
really think of all the names. Now they're really paving the way for people my age and even younger now. Like when I was doing my thing and I started managing and stuff, I hate to say that, but I mean, I got a lot of DMs about how do I get into it? How do I do it? Like, it's so cool what you're doing. And I'm like, I just really like had a great opportunity and I took it and I worked hard. That's it. But like having people like them, it's really, it gives hope to a lot of people who want, because there's so many now new managers and A&Rs and like younger people like my age and younger. It's just, it's incredible to see. It's just like, we need to empower them more. And I know you still have these, and I'm going to get into it, these managers and these label execs that just like, what are you doing, man? Like, just like, it's not, you're not selling, you're not a khadarji, you know, just know how to do business properly. Like, know how to write an email, know how to properly make a phone call. You don't do deals over WhatsApp.
There's a gap. There's definitely a gap, yeah.
And these dinosaurs, I like to call them, they just like move. Yeah. You know, like
you're dead weight.
Move. Yeah. And just, there's so many new people and execs and professionals that really know how to do things and really have an eye. Like, I mean, I'll shout out a few. I mean, Marek Razu, who's Saint Laurent's manager and behind Abu Recordings. Like, we just got to know each other almost a year ago now. And that's like a brother to me. And like, he's incredible at what he does. That's one of them. Where is he based now? He's based in London.
Okay.
And Abu Recordings is just fantastic. That's a whole other conversation. But like people like that are people really we need to empower and like, and just like really shed the light on and like listen to them when they have something to say, you know, like these people know what they're doing. And at the end of the day, we work with the resources we have and then whatever happens, happens. And like for him, it's happening, you know, it's incredible. And there's so many others, like I'm not سمي هلا الكل بس انه بيعرفوا حالهم and they know how much they mean to me. And I try to support everyone as much as I can with the position that I have and with whatever that like outside of my work, just on a personal level, you know, like, cause I've been doing it. I've done it and I have advice to give whenever someone needs it. So that's why I tell everyone, like, if you ever need advice on anything, just text me, man. Just DM me. Like, I'm here, you know, like, I'll help whenever I can. So dinosaurs move away. This new generation of execs and managers, and that's who we need to shed the light on.
I agree with you 100%. I think it's so critical. Even if, look, the first person that created music had no precedence. He didn't know how to read or write music.
Exactly. So,
and a lot of people, I feel, get caught up in the, you have to improvise. There's no textbook, but what does exist during a time that this wasn't available to me, we're talking you have access to everything with the internet now. You can almost get a hold of almost anyone. Whereas before, the industry was like this, you know, Great Wall of China. It was the other side. You know, it was just this unknown. It's just like,
it was such a high barrier to entry. And now,
but now it's like, you know, and there's an openness, especially here. I'm starting to sense that, which I love, because, man, ego is the enemy of everything. You know, it's just like, we won't get into the details of that, but like, that's really the enemy, you know, whether it's your own or that of others. I like there seems to be a real camaraderie now that I'm seeing, especially locally, which I love and appreciate. You know, like, there's collaborations between artists that you wouldn't necessarily think would happen, but it's like...
What's an example you could give?
That's a good question. Masaran, you and I were just recently at a...
I was thinking about that.
You know, we're talking Doozy from Morocco and Saif Nabil from Iraq.
Yeah.
Regardless of how it does, that starts to open up, you know, it bridges, you know, the cultures that already have a lot in common.
Exactly. And it's like Wiggs and Grande Toto who did something, and then Marwan Musa and Stormy.
Yeah. That song is fire.
Oh, it's so sick. Yeah. These guys are such legends. But yeah, like, I love that they do that, you know. Even like now you have like Naomi Perry and Blue Pfeiffer, who just had like this entire thing back in Beirut, and they're all incredible. And female rap to me is just another level, but it's beautiful to see that, you know, and females supporting each other, like Hatta, like Faluka, for example, who I love.
She's amazing.
So incredibly, like, she's a really good friend by now. Like, she's so supportive of everyone. Nadina Ruby, also super supportive of everybody. Shout out to them both. I love them to bits and pieces. Like, all these girls, like, and these guys, these young people, like, man, they just like to support each other. And I love that. I mean, with rap, there's beef here and there, but that's just part of the genre.
Some of it is manufactured, or it's just like, make, you know, let's play house and pretend we have hate for each other. The U.S. has done it. You know, it's an old trick. You know,
it's part of the genre.
Yeah, it's all good.
Makes sense.
I'm curious, how are you able to balance your responsibilities and duties at TikTok with managing or whatever you're able to do outside of that? Are there restrictions? I mean, if you're able to talk about it, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I always try to help however I can. I just recently started like working with Sleyman Demian, who's...
Shout out Sleyman.
Incredible, man. Like, he's such a visionary. And I try to help artists here and there on not like any monetary basis. It's just like, I want to try and help as much as I can. And management has always been, since I started doing it, really something that I truly care about, and more from the standard of artist development, because I like to start from the ground up for some reason. I really like the challenge.
I think it's the right way to do it, because then you get to, you don't want to undo some bad habits. You kind of start with a clean slate. Mm. You know, it's a lot easier to build something that's stronger that way.
And listen, with producers, like with Sleyman, for example, it's cool because you also get to help other artists in the meantime.
Yeah.
Like, and especially now, there's this new strategy of working with independent artists, which is something he's been wanting to do forever.
He mentioned, yeah.
And he thought that I would be the perfect pairing for that. And I was honored, because like, that's all I care about. It's really these artists that like I can help, you know, move the needle with, like, from like diaspora artists to like locals. So like, you have people like Saint Laurent, Bayou, Lana Lugoni, who are like, I love these people, man. Like, I've tried to support them in any shape or form that I could, and I'm glad they got to where they got, and I'm glad I got there early to be able to be their champion, you know, and like they're doing incredible stuff. And whether it's artists like Talia Lahoud from Lebanon, who I also like really try to push as much as I can, and like whether it's people like Zain, Wal Kharman, mm-hmm. Dana Salah, Lunar, that's my mm-hmm. guy. Mm-hmm. From all these different regions, you know, like, and I build friendships with them because like, I really like everyone, and whenever I really want to support someone, that means I like them somehow on a personal level. It's beautiful, man. Like, to me, if I could help you get to what you want, then I've succeeded. Yeah. It's cheesy and people are going to think it's fake.
Not. You're in service of others. It's clear you like... Look, had you not been on the other side of that, you're... Essentially, exactly. Extended the arm you wish had been extended to you, whether directly or indirectly, consciously or subconsciously. Mm. It's clear that you're genuine and you want to, you know, you've tasted, you've sampled, you've seen. Because I happen to be in a somewhat similar, you know, place. عنا بالمنطقة لسه في عنا عقدة النقص إنه over there is better.
Mm.
And in some ways it is. In a lot of ways it is.
Yeah.
But in a lot of ways it's not. We're every bit as talented, as good, deserving of getting
if not,
to the highest.
High,
exactly. And so it's not, I feel like it's that narrative, the empowerment, which is what you're doing essentially. You know, you're just saying, listen, I've seen it on the highest levels. I'm telling you, you're not that far off.
Yeah.
You're better in some cases. We have cases. It's just the platform or the spotlight or that helping hand.
Man, you know? It's crazy when I think about it. I've seen so many artists in their bedrooms become like superstars, whether it's in real time or in just following their journey. And it's possible. You just, for people, it's up to people like us to give them whatever we can give them with nothing expected in return. Like, even outside my work, if I can help you get, like, I don't know, a gig, a shoot, a lawyer, a PR publicist, whatever, I'm going to do it, man. Because, like, one, I just love helping. And two, if it helps you get to where you're going, then I'm part of that success in the most genuine way possible. Not in, I'm like, oh, look, I called them early. They succeeded because of me. No.
Yep.
We all succeed together and, like, if I can help you, perfect. You're getting where you want to get. And I'm glad to be a part of that genuinely.
Yeah. Are you aware of any initiatives to kind of get us caught up with the rest of the world when it comes to either publishing or a governing body when it comes to like, where are we at? I mean, what do you know about where we are when it comes to that?
I have no idea, if I'm being real with you.
Yeah.
I know the IFPI is trying to do a lot of things, and shout out to Rawan, who's incredible. But like, I think things should be coming. Like, I know a lot of people are trying to do different things, but there's nothing concrete yet, really.
Where do you see the bottleneck being? Where's the resistance or the...
It's the big guys.
The dinosaurs still?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I mean it's
the it's
wall sad. Will break. The wall will break at some point. It's not a matter of when if it's gonna happen.
Yeah, know? Like you don't have your ASCAP, your BMIs. Yeah, we have SASM, but like
SASM doesn't really, I mean we need our local
Someone local like that. We don't have our Sony APGs or our Warner Chappells or our like publishing really entity or our Pulse is huge in America. Primary way, like we don't have that. We don't have these people that are like fighting to get you your money. You know, like we don't have well, now we can't say we don't have managers because like
it's
I mentioned
starting to
we
bubble
do.
Up
we don't have entertainment lawyers properly. We don't have proper PR. We don't have radio is a mess.
Plus traditional radio is more or less on its way out unless it finds a way to kind of play along the DSPs, you know, that which is a different topic.
That's a whole other podcast.
It is altogether, but I feel like it's coming. It's just a matter of time.
Got to push through.
For sure. But I'm curious to, you know, kind of tie that into the dollars and cents and the finances because A, it's somewhat taboo still, you know, with the percentages, who gets what from what. And there's been a shift in the currency now is the number of likes, the number of views, the number of followers. Mm-hmm. Whereas there was a time where how many units did you push? How many out of the gate, whether your first week sales. Now it's streams, which, you know, you could have millions of streams and still be broke, you know?
Mm. So you could have millions of streams and sell 10 tickets.
There's a disconnect. There's a massive disconnect there, especially here. I feel like in the West, they've somehow, not all, but they've managed to reach a point where it's like that you can monetize talent. Here, outside of, well, تعملك عرس, you know what I mean? Like you're singing at a wedding. How many touring musicians that are like making a proper living from touring do we know here?
Very few.
Which is, that's not sustainable, which to me, that's the part that worries me most. While the talent is catching up, it's every bit as good as what's out there. We don't have a platform or a way to get these guys to like not have to do something else. You know what I mean? Like, I'm an artist, but I have to have a full-time job. It's like, how do you balance between those two things? So I'm just wondering, like, especially, you know, with the advent of TikTok and shorts and reels and all that stuff. So you get to feel, you know, you look the part that you're famous and, but it doesn't necessarily equate to the money. Where do you see the gap being? Like, what's the one thing that if we could solve for, we could bridge the gap a little?
Wow. Again, this thing with virality is that anyone could go viral, kind of, right? But it's how you sustain it and how you really work to monetize it. Because like, I can go viral, right, for something very dumb, or I could go viral for a really good song. But if I don't do, someone really that went viral with like the dumbest song ever and knows how to monetize it, kudos to you. But then it's really what you do after it. You really have to build your, and that's what I regurgitate this sentence every time, but it's really fan base, community. Focus on engaging with your community. That sometimes there's this precedent here in our region that like, it's cool to not engage or not reply to a comment or like.
That's a misnomer, man. Like you're misinformed if you feel like you're ta'il halak. Don't, man.
Exactly. You're not the weekend.
By like, the people, for the people, at the people, always.
Exactly.
Even the weekend. If the weekend doesn't do that, game
he
over
does
the
that
weekend.
In his own way. Like,
he'll be
aesthetic.
A Tuesday, Wednesday, maximum.
Yeah.
And this is tried and true. Trust me when I tell you, it's you know.
Like build a community.
Yeah.
And that community is going to stream your music like crazy, which is going to make you crazy money. A really good example I can give about that is Behzat.
I swear to God, I was just going to say Behzat is probably one of the best guys doing it.
Man, do you see that engagement he has? Like he competes with like
his army,
top level
his army,
artists.
His fans, man. Shout out to Behzat.
Yeah.
Dear friend. And I love what he's doing, man. He's like championing so... I was going to ask you, actually. I was going to say, other than Behzat, are there models, are there others that you feel, because, you know, Behzat and I are you know, constantly talking about things, you know, he can be doing and stuff. Do you know anybody else that's kind of on the way to doing it well or doing it well from artists that you're interacting with?
Lunar.
Yeah.
He's fantastic at doing that.
He's based abroad, though, right?
In Jordan.
Oh, he's in Jordan. Okay, why did I think he was in the States?
He was in the States with Suhail and everyone. He was on a writing
trip.
Gotcha. Saint Laurent.
Yeah.
Man, Marwan knows what he's doing. Like, and he knows, like, if he puts out merch, it's going to sell out now. Yeah. If he goes on tour, it's going to sell out. If he puts out a record, people are going to listen to it because he engaged with this community and he's giving them what they want. Mm. And he listens. Lana Lubini again. All these young artists, really, again, I feel like I'm naming the same names, but really, like, but those are the ones I'm seeing.
To anyone listening, please take notes, seriously, if that's what it takes, because while a blueprint or a clear blueprint doesn't exist, these are the beginnings of a blueprint. And when you look back, when you peel back and say, how did we get here? Because we're going to get here whenever we do.
Yeah.
It'll be on the backs of the guys we're talking about right now.
Mm-hmm. And another great example, and she's just beginning like to scratch the surface of, is Roxanne. Roxanne Tuma, man, she really focused on content for the longest time, and now is like on the verge of releasing her best work yet. I've listened to that stuff and it's crazy. Like, she knows how to engage with her community. She knows how to talk to them, how to like stylize things for them. It's really knowing your audience. When you know your audience, you engage with them and you go full speed ahead on that. Man, they're the ones that are going to buy the tickets. They're the ones that are going to stream them. Who else? That's why I tell artists, don't be so focused on getting playlists or getting, I don't know, even TikTok support or anything editorial or looks. Like, these are just looks. They're nice. They complement.
It's the difference between being the part and looking the part. Exactly. I feel like more people care about looking the part. You want to be both. Look, you don't want to look the part or be the part. You want to live the part. And then oscillate between the two.
Exactly. You know? Like, you could be the cover of today's top hits, I'm saying anything. Or you could be the cover of Mabad, if any other playlist, or you could be on the cover of Mabad, if Esquire or GQ. But if there's no one to engage with on that, or if it's not translating to streams, why do you care so much? Push as much as you can. You have the tools that are right in front of you to engage with an audience and create an audience. Khalas, like, okay, chasing these things is good when you have both, when you're doing both, eh. But if you're solely focused on like, how am I going to get this? How am I going to get this look? Khalas, just focus on fans. Because the fans will eventually get that for you and you don't even have to go ask for it, which is the case for so many of the artists that
value
I just mentioned.
Add. You got to give them value. Then it's like, then they'll gladly, you have them. You had them at hello. Just keep saying hello.
Exactly. You want to be in a position of power. You don't want someone else to have this over you. Oh, like, I did this, but it's not doing anything. So no, demand it. You know what I mean? And you demand it with a strong audience.
Yeah. With the advent of TikTok, obviously, you know, I've used this example quite a few times in recent months, the Lizzo About Damn Time, where it's not the chorus. The song initially, the initial push for the song didn't yield the results. And then suddenly it becomes this thing that, you know, wins her all these Grammys. So we're clearly entering, hello, obviously attention spans are shortening. Mm. Intros are shorter, song length is shorter. Everything. So everything is shortening. So which plays right into, you know, the short form content, be it TikTok or what have you. How much of that narrative goes into what you tell the artists that you work with, just in terms of when it comes to the format of the song and, you know, what they pay attention to and all that stuff? Or does that factor?
I generally don't try to meddle with the music. Like, if they're on a personal level asking me about, like, what do you think of the song, or what do you think I should release first? What would work for this, what would work for that? I'd give my opinion, but I wouldn't give an opinion based on not data, but based on like precedence, if I were to put it that way.
Just because someone did it one way doesn't mean like follow that.
You'll please don't do that. Yeah. Like, that's the corniest stuff ever. Yeah. But like, I try to just really, from my experience with like the A&Ring that I've done and with like the clients that I've worked with on a management standpoint, I give my opinion and my musical opinion as me, you know, like as my preference.
Not as the end all be all. It's one opinion based on someone who's done 1, 2, 3.
Exactly. And then you do whatever you want to do. Like, do not ever base your creative process on what someone tells you. You just retroactively fit whatever you can and whatever you think you interpret from what they're saying. So like,
is there a
formula?
A formula or a playbook of sorts that will not necessarily get you there, but will increase the odds and stack them in your favor?
Yeah.
What does that look like for you?
I mean, nowadays it's really teasing a song has become such a thing again. I feel like that used to be a thing years ago and then you just dropped. But then now it's back. Because once you tease a song and it somehow relates to someone, they're going to want it and they're going to want it bad. So I think that could be a factor to success, but then doing it the corny way just beats the purpose. But
doing
like,
it just to do it is not going to
happen. If you think there is merit in doing it and you think people are going to relate to it prematurely before it's out. And if you want to test out a few different ones to see what people respond well to, you have that option now. But to say there's a formula, لا ما بحس لأنه there's never a form. Like the songs you would least expect to ever go viral. And then the songs you expect to go viral don't. And then vice versa.
If you had to, again, we're not trying to say, guys, here's the magic spoon. There's no, there's no magic spoon. If there was, it would be boring, I think, out of Kiev. And as consistent as Max Martin is, who happens to be my favorite producer,
oh, man.
He himself doesn't have it. I mean, he's been right a lot, but if he knew, he's had more misses than he's had hits. He just happens to have a lot of hits.
39 you know? Number ones or whatever it is.
It's a lot.
So how many songs has he done?
A lot. A ton more.
Probably over 1,000.
Yeah. I mean, the guy is a monster when it comes to that. But the reason I'm talking about that is there's something, regardless of taste, you know, we can't say one thing is better than another because you like salty, I like sweet, he likes sour, she likes a bit of both. Does quality, does how good a song is that a factor anymore? Because it feels like it almost doesn't matter whether the song is good or not. So I'm just wondering where you sit on that.
Yeah, I don't think there's a good or bad song. If it's relatable to someone, it's good. Even if it's like the Friday song. Mm. And to me, that's a good song. That's a good pop song. Yeah. Like it did what it was meant to do. And to me, personally, if a song is good just on the piano, as it is over.
If you strip down all the bells and whistles, and
then that's a good song.
Yeah.
And if people are really, a hit to me is when you can really sing a song in your head after hearing it once, as a hit. Like it could be a good song, just not a hit, in my opinion.
The earworms. The basically almost every song Max Martin's written. Almost
crazy. Yeah. Every song you could play on the piano, it sounds beautiful. It's crazy. Even if it's like, I don't know about the randomest thing ever, or if it's like super raunchy and you play it on the piano and it's like the most beautiful thing you've ever heard and you would never expect it. Yeah. Crazy guy. Crazy.
Random question. Are you a music first or lyrics first or both?
Lyrics first.
Oh, you're a lyrics first. Interesting.
Oh my God. I analyzed this shit out of lyrics.
Okay. What are some good like lyricists that you're just...
Freddie Mercury. That's like the king of lyrics to me, but that's like a typical answer. Yep. But like a good writer, I think.
In recent times, let's just say in the past 5 years.
In the past 5 years or whatever, 10, 15, Taylor Swift, man, as much as people hate on her, like she knows how to write a song.
Yeah.
People have this misconception sometimes in the general public, like it has to be philosophical and
no.
It's really about relating to
conversational.
People. Telling a story, a narrative, and just good melody. That's it. And she does that every single time. Mm. And maybe not every single time, but you know, she
does it
clearly.
Well,
she has a track record, man. Like her, Adele, Bruno Mars, man, crazy songwriter. I really like Leanne LaHavis. She's incredible R&B artist. And whether it's rappers like Kendrick, like J. Cole, like, I don't know, there's so many, but like these people just know how to write a song. And then Nicki Minaj, to me, greatest female writer of all time, like of recent times, at least in terms of rap. There's a bunch I could name, but I mean, a good writer doesn't mean like SAT words.
No, it's not. It's not about that. It's got to land. It's got to connect with the people on the other. And the reason I ask is obviously, you know, Max is definitely a melodies. You know, he thinks melody first to him. Lyrics are there to be in service of the melody.
Yeah.
Which there's no right or wrong. I was just wondering, you know, where you.
For me, it's lyrics, man. I'm just a very emotional person. So
in your process, do you write lyrics first, then you set that to music? Not the other way around. Have you tried the other way around?
Sometimes, I mean, I would get like find a beat on YouTube and I would just write to it. Yeah. But like most of the time, I write and hum melodies in my head. Well, at the time when I used to do it, but definitely lyrics first. 80% of the time.
Where do you find inspiration, or if you get in a rut creatively, regardless of whether you're still doing that, just in general, day to day, you know, when you get blocked, what kind of gets you unblocked?
In terms of like, if I'm trying to write a song?
Write a song or give good advice, be good at what you do. You know, what gets you out of your head when you're just too much in your...
If it's writing a song, I used to just call up my friends and like, tell me about your problems. And I would just get inspired from that and write a song from that. But nowadays, just going on a walk, just doing yoga, meditating, listening to music, listening to super like chill, like super, super chill music, ballads, get me thinking, get me recentered.
What's your take on AI and the impact it's beginning to have either on music or content creation? Or I see you smiling.
I don't know yet. I don't have a definite opinion. It scares me at times.
What scares you about it?
It's like, why are you trying to negate like the tact of things, you know? Like in a sense, my friends are weird. Like they call me Gen Z sometimes when I'm clearly a millennial. Like I'm born in 94, right? But then I feel like I'm a millennial. So I'm kind of in between. So I'm like,
it's a weird place to be in. Yeah.
I was born in a weird time. And then it's like a specific number of years for millennials where there's this like, okay, I relate to this, but I also relate to
you
that.
You were cooked enough here. And
right? Yeah, because I had Walkmans and I had cassettes and I had that, but I also had an iPod, a phone, a streaming platform.
MP3s and...
I had it all, right? But... to me, AI, I mean, it's still to be TBC, to be confirmed, but like, it scares me just because like, I don't want people to stop writing songs. I don't want something to write a song for me. What do you mean? Like, it's not the same, although people try. Like the AI proponents are, oh no, don't be like, no. Like I love music so much that I don't want it to be a robot doing it for people.
Here's a question for you. Name 3 to 5 Max Martin songs that you're like are amazing.
Baby One More Time.
If that had been written by an AI, would it have hit you any differently? If what you got out of it was the same? Again, I'm playing devil's advocate here.
I don't know. I really don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe AI is capable of writing such a song, but I really don't know. I need to see it.
Again, it's not a right or wrong topic. I'm just kind of wanting to gauge, because you're obviously working where you work, doing what you do. Technology is, you can't separate technology from
what I do,
from that part. So it's how do you leverage it, you know, to your advantage and just understand kind of that. For me, a big part of it excites me. It does concern me just in terms of where it goes, because, you know, there's the sentient, you know, does it grow a brain? Does it go places? Yeah.
No, but I mean, in a way, I just thought of this now. It could help you when you're in a rut. Like if you're in a writer's block and you're just, I want to, like you got on ChatGPT and I want to write a song about this, that. Maybe it could be a source of inspiration.
I mean, just like loops, just like, you imagine making songs without DAW, like Logic is kind of the beginnings of AI. It's a tool. If you treat it as a tool, an extension.
That's true.
You know, so I think perspective has a lot to do with, you know, what you do with it, but it's still in its infancy right now. I just feel like the acceleration that we're headed into, it's going to get insane.
That's going to be interesting. Very quickly. It's going to be interesting. It's scary, but also beautiful. So there's always this dichotomy when it comes to these things, and there's never right or wrong, white or black. It's again, to be confirmed.
So when you were growing up as a kid, your idols were clear cut, either an artist or an actor or writer, producer. Now it's like, you know, I have a nephew. I've said this a few times. I asked him, he's 9 now, but a few years ago, I asked him what you wanted to be. And he said a YouTuber, AKA content Logan creator, Paul. Right? So, but that's, you know, he doesn't look up to, say, a Leonardo DiCaprio or Brad Pitt, a Weeknd, as like, that's the model. So now clearly I feel like, do you feel like the artist still has that impact on an up and coming, you know, whether a she, he, what have you, mm-hmm. or being a content creator or celebrity. Being a celebrity today no longer just means being a singer or an actor.
Or someone with talent.
Or something with talent. I kind of want to dive deeper on that. What's your take on the state of that as it relates to inspiring those that may want to emulate that?
Listen, I mean, to me, a content creator is an entertainer. An entertainer is a celebrity because mm-hmm. acting falls under sure. entertainment.
As does singing, as does writing, as does
exactly.
what have you.
So if you're able to entertain an audience, even if the content is not the best content, I mean, that's still talent, right? But it's, to me, you need to have something of value to say, whether it's, if you're trying to be a YouTuber, a TikToker, whatever, what have you, all of that. If you have something to say and you have a message, good for you. Like, yeah, I still think that's fine if people want to look up to these people, because depending, you have, oh God, no, I'm not going to name that name because it's like a whole thing right now. It really depends on context.
Yeah.
Like, it's like anything. Like, you could have a singer that's like terrible, like sending all the wrong messages, and people look up to him. So it's the same thing, you know, like whether it's like people like 6ix9ine who are super controversial as a rapper, and some kids look up to him, but some kids look up to someone like, I don't know, Noor Stars, for example. But she's doing really cool stuff, and she's helping communities, and she's doing stuff. So again, it's not a one size fits all type of thing.
I understand. What is the one thing you wish more artists paid more attention to in the region?
Their craft. Just get better at what you do. Just don't expect things to come to you. Go grab them you know what I mean? Just go grab that opportunity and just keep working on your craft constantly. No matter how good you think you are, you can always get better. And I've learned this from my days in the US because I see how much I had an artist.
It's next level, man. It's next level.
It's insane. Yeah. I had an artist, Gavin Haley, who was in the studio every single day, writing and completing a song from start to finish every day, or every other day. That's an exaggeration. But like, if we worked on two EPs together, and we had probably like 40, 50 songs to choose from for each one. Imagine, maybe not complete, but then you'd narrow down and complete them. So that's how you get your best work.
That's
really
how I almost anyone that asks me, that's the one thing I tell them. Right. Don't release, but have
an arsenal.
Like 20, have 20 to pick from instead of being like, look, to be 6 for 6 or 1 for 1 or 2 for 2. Man, even the pros don't have that, you know? So look at the, you know, Ed Sheeran, he's talked about it ad nauseum, you know, just in terms of
10,000 hours.
The 10,000 or the faucet, you know, the bad water first until you get the good water. You know, I mean, homeboy's written thousands of songs. You know, his hit rate gets better, obviously, but
that's insane.
You know, look, don't get complacent.
Don't get comfortable.
Yeah.
I've gotten comfortable so many times.
Comfortable feels good.
Oh yeah.
It feels good.
That's the best. But
the more you can combat that, you know, it's there to serve you, you know?
I mean, it's good to be comfortable once in a while. You don't want to overwhelm yourself at the end of the day. There's mental health at play. But if you expect every song you write to be not a hit, but like a success, it's not going to be the case.
How do you measure success today? What does that look like to you? Is that a stream, number of streams, number of shares, you know, its impact on, I ask myself that a lot.
I don't think there's one metric to success. I think it's different things here and there. To me, success means a bunch of things. So not selling out a show, but having people show up for you, whether it's
being able
five
to pull a crowd,
or 1,000.
You're able to take a crowd with you places.
Exactly. If you have people wanting to listen to what you have to say, both on the like streaming side or on the live side. Whether, I mean, the streams and stuff, I mean, it is an indicator. It's not, I mean, it's...
It's not the only... Yeah.
It's misrelatable. What's the word? It's relative, right? To where you are now. Really, if you're able to touch people and they engage with you and you engage with them and you have good amount of streams and you're able to pull a crowd, that's it. And it's, again, it's relative. Like whether you're someone with 500 followers and you're able to get 100 people to come to your show, or you stream 5,000 streams, good for you. That's success to me. But just keep raising the bar. Like if you have a success, just keep striving for more, next level. Because again, success sometimes gets you comfortable. But you know, sometimes most of the time you should consider success as another challenge. Because like if you hit a milestone, it should be fuel to want to hit the next one, and then the next one, and then the next one. There's always milestones to hit. That's why I hate people who call themselves professionals.
Yeah, at what point do you become
experts.
A professional? Yeah.
There's no such thing as an expert. You could be good at something, yeah, but you just keep getting better and better and better. Yeah. You're just good at it.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Best to call yourself an expert, that's when you limit your success to
On the subject of being local and kind of winning the local battle first before you expand, how important is it for those who are from this region? In your case, you wanted to sing in English. Mm. You sang in English. How important is it to be local? Like, sing like the people you want to sing to. And it clearly, you know, there's a whole generation that speaks a mixture of both.
Two or three languages.
You know, so singing to that, you know, they say, بيحكوا عربي شوي وبدخلوا لك literally هون وديجا هون وقصص.
That's me.
Exactly. But as they, we're not all there yet.
Yeah.
We're not all there.
We're a big minority.
Lebanon makes sense because of its, I mean, we're not going to get into politics, but as the, you know, the connection to France, the connection to the West, and a huge portion of Lebanese live abroad. So there's a, you know, a lot of connection.
Big
whereas
diaspora.
Exactly. Other countries may not have that, but we're seeing a growing
globalization.
Globalization. Do you think we're missing out? Do you think more artists should be focusing on localizing, winning that local first round first before they expand?
From what I've seen, the options are limitless. Like you have the Bayous, the St. Levants. You have Noel Kharman, Zain. But then again, these names are different. They work differently. Because there's not one, again, like if you want to try and dabble in different languages and that's your thing and you genuinely think it is, do it, right? But if it's forced, then don't do it. Like, I don't think there's such a thing as winning. I mean, it's good to focus on where you're strong, yes. But like eventually you have to just break that and try new things to be able to go to different markets. Like an example of that right now is this Moroccan rapper called Cousin. Mm-hmm. He has this song Love that is just
it's amazing,
right? He's Moroccan. He lived his entire life in Morocco. The song, I mean, it's Arabic, Moroccan,
but also,
and also French.
Maroc, very much a part of the francophone, you know.
Exactly. So people in France related to it. It's on number 8 or 5 on Viral 50, Netherlands.
Yeah.
Netherlands.
They have a healthy North African
exactly
demographic too, yeah.
But when you're going to reach the people you're going to reach, I think just do whatever feels right. And like, just again, emphasis on whatever feels right. مش لأنه X did a trilingual banner that's going to work for you. But if you feel like you want to dabble in it and you have the skill, then do it.
And I mentioned that, I'll tell you why, because I feel like it limits the pool of audience. And if you're looking at, have we crossed 400 million Middle East?
Maybe.
لنقول. Approximately 400 million.
Egypt has 100 million alone.
Exactly. In Egypt, I'm sure, an artist like Lunar or Zayn or their local Felucca or the local equivalent, how many actually think and talk that way out of 100 million? 5 million messing up? Would you be alienating about a potential 60 million more by not out of Kyiv? I agree with you when it comes to if it's you, if it's an extension of you, I get it. But I feel like you may be well served in trying to say, I need to speak their language because you need an audience. Especially, maybe this applies. Maybe this applies more to pop than say someone who wants to do their thing.
Like you have instances like Rima Sawas and Sara Zakaria, أكبر غلطة بحياتي.
That's super local. That's what I love about it.
شو أكبر غلطة بحياتي؟
Sucks accuse من الجميع.
عليت واحد واطي بس عن جد. If you really think about that sentence, أكبر غلطة بحياتي عليت واحد واطي. Everyone relates to that. Everyone's done that. And that's what I tell people. I'm like, and it's just, it's Shaabi music, but like anyone I know, anyone from whatever background is singing that song and knows about it. If I utter that sentence, they're going to continue.
They'll finish the sentence.
It's a banger. Like that song is a great song.
And some people, those who are like too sophisticated to be
bothered. Oh, you know?
Exactly. But
no, it's cool. And I really dig what she's doing because she clearly
is talking the language
The language of the mainstream the majority. Because we, as third culture kids, are the minority, whether we like it or not. Yeah. But there is a big minority. There is.
And it's growing
astronomically.
Because of TikTok, because of the internet, because of all that stuff. So we're more open that way. But we're leaving a lot of unserved people that want to feel that connection.
Exactly. And I think songs like the one I just mentioned kind of marry the two because part of third culture and Frenchies and people who speak in English or whatnot know it. But it'd be interesting to see how we can really bridge the gap.
Localize it. And I'm a big proponent of localizing it. And it speaks what you're saying. Just you got to do you بالأخير. But spend the effort, dig deeper you're missing out on a much bigger audience.
Yeah.
Again, not by manufacturing it, but it's just
trying.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. These two are like, Sleiman always tells me that. He's like, but you like this because, you know, you appreciate music and you really know it and you study it and you did. But that's a minority. And it took me a while to understand that, you know, like not everyone is going to appreciate an intricate, nice,
that's what I'm saying.
Instrumentalized ballad. Yeah. People want Rim Sawas and Sara Zakaria and like a one-man show vibe. But also, there's different tastes. But like, things are catching up to each other, I think, like we said. But there's room for everyone. And that's, I think, the خلاصة القصة هاي كلها. إنه في محل للكل. يعني ما حدا أحسن من حدا. But some people have more potential of having a bigger crowd than others, depending on what they do. But things are always ever changing.
Crystal ball, if you had to guess, how long before we export? And I had very high hopes for Saad Mujarrad, especially when he released Maalim. And I maintain we need about 30 Maalim, 30 songs that have that kind of an impact on a pan-Arab platform before it starts to be Despacito.
Yeah.
You bring in the Justin Bieber. Miriam Faris with Tukutaka مثلاً, is an example, regardless of whether it landed or not.
Yeah.
You know.
That's a great song.
How far off do you think we are from having that? Yeah, مثلاً, we have the model, Andy. Ricky Martin, Shakira, Maluma. They blew
Bad
up
Bunny,
local. They have a huge Latin market that they tapped into before. And mind you, there's, you know, the Latin community in the U.S. is a big, by numbers, is a big one now. So it makes sense. Arabs.
So are the Arabs.
I mean, they're getting there, but they're not nearly.
Procreate.
Get busy.
No.
Exactly. Is that what it looks like? We don't know what it looks like exactly, but do you think that that's what it's going to take before? Because clearly, and you've mentioned it before, there's a lot of talk about externally, you know, predicting that the next big boom is from this part of the world, that's all good and all on paper.
But where is it?
We're not as close as some people might think. And it, a lot more things have to be in place.
Yeah.
It might be a one-off. It's not sustainable, I don't think, yet. If I'm just wondering into, you know, seeing
where... Isam did it, right? But
yeah, but...
It wasn't maybe the Arabic.
بغض النظر حتى عصام, and this is not directed at him as a person, it almost felt accidental, almost.
Mm.
Almost. And I remember...
But he just, again, he knew how to build an audience. He was smart about
it. And kudos for him. Again, I give him credit where credit is due, but look at somebody I used to know. Do you remember the song?
Oh, yeah. Naija.
It's almost a curse. Look at Abu Talad Da'at. I was hoping for Arba'at Da'at, Khamis Da'at, Sit Da'at, but where is it? It's almost a curse to have a song be that successful right off the bat. And I hope Isam has much more in, you know, in him. But these one-offs aren't enough is what I'm trying to say. I'm just wondering if you feel like we're...
I think we're closer than ever.
Okay. That I agree with.
I think that's the obvious thing to state, but are we close enough? I can't say yes or no, because things are happening so fast. Like, again, Love by Cousin. Who knows what that song in a few months will do? Yeah. Like, it's on an astronomical rise.
Yeah.
Saint Laurent, same thing. Hala. All of that is not pure Arabic, which...
Close enough.
I think segment this question into two. I think a pure Arabic song is going to take a while to really become a global hit purely, and who knows, I could be wrong, but something that's like a marriage of different things, like what everyone I mentioned is doing, is very close.
I agree with you. And so here's the thing.
But I want this side to flourish.
I do too.
But this side is beautiful.
Yeah, I agree.
Maybe giving this part, like the pure Arabic, as like a little
definition. Yeah. And we need it. We need it.
We do. Because it's the only way, you know, بالآخر, well, yeah, that's a good point. بالآخر, how did Despacito happen? It was already big in Latin America. But it needed Justin Bieber to take it to...
It was already massive.
Exactly. But to fully...
But there's an important point here, which leads to my next question. Luis Fonso wasn't Ricky Martin. Here's a question. Had Ricky Martin done Despacito, would Despacito have been as big as it is? And the reason, here's how I'll tie into my question. Does it need to be an already established artist to be the vehicle? Or could it be... someone we've never heard of, not never heard of, but for all intents and purposes. And for me, Luis Fonso, before that song,
I didn't know him.
عرفت كيف? And mind you, مر علي كتير قصص. I'm no stranger to the industry.
Yeah, probably way more than me too.
It's not about that. But it came out of nowhere. Out of nowhere. Mind you, timing has a lot to do with it. The technological advances, maybe if TikTok hadn't been around or whatever platforms helped propel that song or the accessibility to a Justin, Justin, I think, was in Colombia or wherever he heard it. He's like, I want to get on that. You know what I mean? It's like, those are the things you can't manufacture. My question is, the reason I had hopes in Saddam Jarrad is because he has more charisma, he's paid the dues.
Yeah,
he's worked hard regardless of everything else.
Yeah,
so it's the homeboy is ready, and he looks the part, he is the part, he sounds the part, etc. If we're gonna talk strictly from a
outside
proficiency,
the mess that is his personal life, because
proficiency wise, he's on a league all his own. There aren't that many people that have it that figured out.
But Muhammad Ramadan, though, he had it.
No, not Saddam Jarrad level.
Yeah.
Homeboy can't dance. He barely can rap. He barely can hold a tune. Regardless, I'm not knocking him, by the way.
I know.
Is not a knock. And again, not that you need to be a Saddam Jarrad to do it. But if you look at historically someone who's good enough, Christina Aguilera is Christina. You can't compare Ariana to someone who can't sing like Ariana. It's unfair. It's not to say one is better than the other. I feel like with a Saad Mjarad or someone who is as ready, you were a lot more likely to potentially have that happen. Now it kind of leaves it to, does it take someone that we haven't heard? And مثلاً, it could be a Lunar, it could be a Saint Laurent, it could be a Zayn, it could be anyone.
Eliana playing her Coachella.
Yeah, that's massive. That's a huge, huge thing.
That's my girl. I love her. I love her.
You know?
I think, yeah, I mean, the point you made about Rick, if Ricky Martin had done that song.
They're both from Puerto Rico. He's much bigger.
Maybe not. That's what I'm saying. The appeal of it was that it was someone wasn't really known and ended up getting a monster feature on it. And it just blew out the stratosphere. But I think it's going to be someone new or someone up and coming, really.
I hope so. Regardless, I'll take it. I'll take it on this side or that side. You know, it's
exactly like the possibilities are endless. I think the past 2 years in the industry here have shown that really you never know who's next. Mm-hmm. Never.
Yeah.
You can catch it early. And I've been blessed enough to find people early. Mm-hmm. But
and برجع وبأكد, we still have a few things to work out before we get there.
We need an infrastructure to begin with.
Yeah. And because look, you could be hot today and then in 3 years, you just, how the hell are you going to keep the lights on? And if you're living at mom and dad's between the 17 to 24, and then suddenly you're still big. And look, we've all been there.
Yeah.
But at what point do you get to like, okay, can I sustain myself doing music and not having a job? Is my career over as I know?
I mean, that's tough as it is outside everywhere else.
Of course.
So imagine how it is here.
Yeah,
then with the whole, لا بدك تكون حكيم, لا بدك تكون.
Yeah. The taboos, yeah.
Classic. The big three.
Yeah.
Doctor, lawyer, and what's the third
engineer,
one?
Engineer. It's a big one. Besh Mohandis.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. What a legend.
What taboos do you think were it's time to just like...
I think there's a lot of different things. Ooh. There's letting men express themselves they want to express themselves. Like, people are doing it way more now. Like the outfits wigs wear is amazing. The outfits, a lot of different people like him wear like more daring, more just let
envelope
people
pushing.
Let people express themselves the way they want to, I think. The way it feels more authentic to them. And this myth that music doesn't feed, I mean, let them try. Give them the tools that they need at a young age. Put them in singing lessons. Put them in production. Put them in, okay, go play football, go play everything else. But like, if they're interested into art, I think parents nowadays, I think, are more lenient on that. But let children explore their artistic side from the get-go and give them the tools to get good at it. Because who knows? You have superstar producers at 14 in the US now who know how to just build a song from scratch. Let people in this region explore that. I think it's really giving them, had I had maybe the know-how or the tools or way earlier on, who knows?
Who's right? To say, like,
my bad if,
yeah.
I mean, I think that's the most important thing. It's really starting really, really young. Let children express their artistic like talents or whatever and explore them and build them. Because it takes a lot. Like all these big superstars that we have outside, like in the West now, have been working since they were 4 or 5 years old.
Mm.
You know?
Like Justin Bieber. I mean, there are so many examples.
Disney,
of
the Nickelodeon, Star Search, all of these things, like, or just being on a TV show or doing theater.
It's so segmented here and it's so sporadic. You know, we don't have, it all goes back to infrastructure. There's so many little bubbles, you know, it's hard to appeal. You're like leaving your bubble to go appeal to another bubble. It's difficult.
And then you have incompetent labels sometimes that just like put these artists in like the weirdest deals ever and they get demotivated and depressed and they stop and they, You know, like that's what we say, but we need an infrastructure by people who know what the hell they're doing, you know? And stop like the old ways of this. I mean, I'm way too new in the industry here to even know of everything. But from what I know, like, come on.
Guys, no,
it's outdated.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Way. Speak their language.
Yeah.
And then be fair with what you're doing. Stop trying to, there's barely enough money in it as it is. And you're trying to rip people off.
Yeah. Like,
what?
On the issue of mental health, do you think there's enough of an awareness? Where are we on that? Should we be doing more? How can we be doing more?
We should always be doing more, I think. It's definitely way better than it ever was. Mm. Therapy, if you'd say that 20 years ago, they'd look at you like you're possessed by the devil. Mm. Yoga, same thing. Meditation, same thing. These are two things I think that for me have helped my mental health a lot. It's ever since I came back to Lebanon and I was depressed and I came through a rough patch. And seeing a therapist, man, it's just, it's part of life, really. Like, you need someone impartial that you can talk to your problems about. And, like, if you talk to God and that's your thing, good for you, right? That's a form of therapy as well. And I respect it a lot. And I do it in my own way. But stop trying to force religion as a therapy, because it's not. It is in your own way. If it is, then good. But like forcing it on people, stop it. And how we get better at mental health is really awareness, awareness, awareness. I think the more we can, people like us who have positions that where they can raise awareness on things, anyone with a platform should be advocating for mental health and like seeing a therapist and like, and admitting that. It's okay not to be okay sometimes. Like it's part of life. Like we're not all living our best lives all the time. Like we go through stuff. We go through death. We go through breakups. We go through stress, anxiety, a lot of work. Like it's fine. It really is just awareness. But I think we're in a much better place than we've ever been in this region. But there's still a lot of work to do, just like everything else.
Yeah,
of course. It almost feels like it's that way in everything.
Yeah. For those who want to reach out to you, what's the best way to get a hold of Call Me Tyro?
It's Instagram, it's LinkedIn. But I mean, with my Instagram, I really read everything. And I reply to everything whenever I can.
I'll leave that on the screen for those who are interested in reaching out to the...
Please feel free.
I've met a lot of people, thought it is one of the more genuine ones. And I can feel
Thank you, man.
From the time I met you that he means what he says. I'm sure you're not always going to be able to immediately respond to anyone, but I know you'll make an effort.
Always.
Which is super appreciated. We need more people like you.
I appreciate that.
And one
that,
more
man.
Question in closing. There's a gazillion more questions I'd like to ask, which means we'll have you, if you'd like to be
I'd
back.
I'd love to, man. This is such a refreshing conversation.
It's awesome.
It doesn't feel like I'm even on camera. It just feels like I'm talking to someone, you know? And we've had this conversations like
mission accomplished. That, the idea is that whoever's either listening or watching us to feel like they either learned something or, ask a question that they, a burning question. Have you thought of putting together either a seminar or a course or some sort of like a one-to-many where you could, it's not just a one-to-one, to maybe like...
Yeah, I mean...
Demystify and,
The music industry, deconstructing the music industry. I've always wanted to do that. I always felt like education is... I think... I don't know much, right? But like, I think I know enough to where I can give basics and...
Now, there's value bombs after value bombs, guys. Yeah,
like it's maybe getting a bunch of people together who know different things and just holding like master classes or stuff like that. But like eventually I think that I would want to do, but also I don't know how many years from now. I'd like to start like my own... Or just partner up with someone else, like management company, label, stuff like that. Because, man, I have a lot of crazy ideas. And
we need that. We need those ideas.
And who knows,
I'm looking forward to it, man.
Inshallah.
We need to talk. Maybe we put it together.
Who knows? Yeah.
I can't thank you enough, man. This has been great.
Thank you for having me.
We'll definitely do this again. Ajit, thank you for your time. I know you've got a lot on your plate. This has been amazing.
Always.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, man.
Yalla. We'll talk soon. Cheers.